Hello everyone, and welcome to our Year in Review Regional Roundtable series, brought to you by the Employment Law Alliance, the largest network of labor and employment lawyers from the best law firms around the globe. I'm your host, Philippe Durand, partner with Auguste Debouzy in France. The ELA Global Employment Law Year in Review series is classically our most popular series of the year, focusing on the most impactful regulations of the past year and forecasting what employers can expect in the current year. Today, we are connecting with a member firm from our European region. Joining us on the program is Noreen Meehan, a partner with A&L Goodbody in Ireland. Noreen, welcome to our Year in Review Roundtable, and how are you doing today?
I'm very well, Philippe, and thank you for having me on the ELA Year in Review Roundtable. I'm delighted to join you today to share my insights on some of the key employment law developments in Ireland in the last 12 months and what we can expect to see in the year ahead.
Excellent. I guess you're calling from your offices in Dublin, right?
I am indeed.
Very good. So let's get started. You know, in this series, there's one question we cannot avoid, and I have to ask it to you to start with. Noreen, what would be for your jurisdiction, for Ireland, the most significant legal changes that you would like to cover and summarize for our audience today as far as 2022 is concerned?
Well, Philippe, there's certainly no shortage of developments on the employment law front in Ireland in 2022. During the course of last year, we saw the introduction of new gender pay gap reporting obligations in Ireland for the first time, as well as some new EU regulations to improve transparency and predictability of employees' working conditions. We also saw a number of important pieces of legislation progress through the legislative process in areas such as remote and flexible working, statutory sick leave, and whistleblowing, with a number of these set to become law in 2023. So again, we're expecting a busy year ahead for employment lawyers in Ireland, but focusing first on last year and what we saw in 2022, and I referred to gender pay gap reporting just a moment ago as one of the most significant legal changes that impacted employers here last year. And it impacted initially companies with 250 or more employees. And those companies captured by the requirements were obliged to publish specified information about the pay and bonus gap between men and women within their organization. So they had to choose a snapshot date in June 2022, calculate their gender pay gap figures using data for the 12-month period up to the snapshot date, and then publish their gender pay gap data no later than the same date in December 2022. And then in addition to publishing that gender pay gap information, employers were obliged to identify the reasons for their pay gap, if they had one, and the measures they were taking to or proposing to take to try to eliminate or reduce the gap. So as you can imagine, December 22 was a pretty busy time for employers captured by this legislation as they got to grips with preparing the calculations and complying with their reporting obligations for the first time. And just to note, Philippe, that while these mandatory reporting obligations apply at the moment to larger employers with more than 250 employees, that threshold is going to drop to 150 in 2024 and then down to 50 employees in 2025. So many employers have been closely watching this one and how it's playing out.
It's interesting and funny, I would say, that you were starting talking about gender pay gap legislation because I was part of a webinar, which is available now on replay, an ELA webinar, where I did talk about the same topic for France. Noreen, you were also alluding in your introduction about another piece of legislation you want to talk about in relation to EU directive, right, on the transparent working conditions, correct?
Yeah, that's right. That's another pretty material employment law development in the last year that has really impacted on all employers in Ireland, regardless of their size. So this is the introduction of new EU regulations on transparent and predictable working conditions. So just to touch on some of the requirements that have been introduced, really with the aim of improving employee working conditions and promoting more transparent and predictable employment. So these include things like an introduction of a six-month limit on probationary periods in employment contracts, which has had quite an impact. A general rule that employees can't be prohibited from taking up parallel employment with another employer outside of their work schedule. There are certain you know, limited exceptions to that, but that is the general rule. There are greater rights around predictability of working time and getting reasonable advance notice of variable working schedules, and also a right to request more predictable and secure working conditions where they're available. And then finally, there's a right to be given written notification of certain particulars of employment within certain timeframes, which are a lot tighter than what the previous position was under Irish law. So as a result of these regulations, employers really have had to go back and review their template employment contracts and policies to ensure they're consistent with these new requirements. And coming out of this as well, we've also seen a sort of much tighter focus on managing employees' probationary periods to ensure that the maximum 6 month limit on probationary periods is adhered to.
That duration, Nolene, is interesting because I find it quite not surprising, but you know, if I think of my own jurisdiction, France, we can go sometimes as far as 8 or 9 months in total, although 6 months would usually be the maximum limit in practice. But certainly for the Irish members of our audience today, it's certainly good to know for the future. Now, Nolene, you realize that in this series, we try also to give our audience a kind of focus about changes of leadership or governments, changes in each jurisdiction. So I would like to hear you about Ireland for 2023 and maybe for 2022 also, of course.
Yeah, well, there isn't too much to report here, Philippe, in terms of changes in leadership or government. There was in December 22, actually for the first time in the history of the state, the role of Taoiseach, which is the Irish term for our head of government. It rotated between the two main government parties. So this change in the head of government, while it was historic, it was actually planned and mandated by the programme for government, which had been agreed between the coalition parties when the government was formed back in June 2020. So we were expecting this rotation to happen. And I think it's fair to say it hasn't really brought with it any significant changes in that's impacting on the jurisdiction here in Ireland. But maybe just to comment on the current Taoiseach, who is Leo Varadkar. This is his second time serving as head of government. And during his previous tenure, his government oversaw the introduction of quite a few new workers' rights, such as draft statutory sick pay, which we've just seen come into force, which I'll touch on a little later, and the development of a code of practice on the right to disconnect. So I think in keeping with the momentum that we've seen under Varadkar's government, particularly in the last few years, we'd expect to see more legislative changes coming down the line in the employment sphere in 2023 and beyond. And maybe just to give you one example, a recent example. So the Irish government has agreed to the introduction of a new national living wage, and that is set to replace the minimum wage by 2026. So it will be set at 60% of hourly median wages. And the first step towards reaching a living wage is an 80 cent increase to the national minimum wage, bringing it to 11.30 an hour from the 1st of January 2023. And this will then be followed by gradual increases to the national minimum wage until it reaches 60% of the hourly median wages by 2026. So it'll be a phasing out of our national minimum wage to be replaced with this living wage. And just to give you an idea of what that looks like in today's terms, so in 2023, it's estimated that 60% of median earnings would equate to around 1310 per hour.
There's certainly a significant piece of information, Nolene, in terms of costs for employers. The other thing that crossed my mind as you were talking is about the right to disconnect. I think that throughout those webinars or ELA podcasts that we record, it's about the third or fourth time I hear about the right to disconnect, which France has put in place for a while now, although it's not totally clear about the legislation that goes around that. But that's certainly something worth stressing today. So thank you for that. Now, we all know, Nolene, that as part of COVID-19, we have been facing, or following COVID-19, I should say, we have been facing a lot of what we call hybrid work, you know, people working remotely from home, from the beach, from other countries, sometimes in cross-border situations, which may, of course, trigger some specific difficulties in several areas. What would you have to say about that as far as Ireland is concerned?
Well, I mean, it's really the topic of the moment, isn't it, Philippe? I think in all jurisdictions, and Ireland is no different. I came across a recent news article which said that Irish job posts offering remote and hybrid work have increased by almost 50% over the last 12 months. So that very much aligns with our experience, which is that employers in Ireland, many of them anyway, are now offering hybrid working. So, you know, maybe 2 days in the office, 3 days at home, or the other way around, where it's possible, of course, to do that. But in terms of Ireland's approach to legislating for remote and flexible working, the Work-Life Balance Bill and Miscellaneous Provisions Bill is something that is in draft form at the moment, and it's making its way through the legislative process. And that bill, once it's enacted, is going to serve a dual purpose in that it'll provide for statutory rights for employees to request a remote working arrangement. And it's also going to allow eligible employees with children up to the age of 12 and those with caring responsibilities to request flexible working arrangements. So flexible working is defined as an arrangement where an employee's working hours or patterns are adjusted, including through the use of remote working or reduced or flexible working schedules. And employers are going to be obliged to very carefully consider and deal with any requests for remote and flexible working once this legislation is enacted. But look, I think in reality, it's fair to say, Philippe, that the legislation in Ireland is really lagging behind what's happening in practice on the ground. Employers are already dealing with remote working requests from employees and flexible working pattern requests, particularly given that a number of employees may have moved away from urban centres during COVID-19 and they may or may not have returned to the office on a full-time basis. So really, the draft legislation that we're seeing is simply going to put the request for remote and flexible working arrangements on a statutory footing, albeit that they're happening in practice at the moment. So I think regardless of the legal position, it's fair to say that employees do have an expectation that there's going to be some degree of flexibility provided to them in terms of where they work and when their work is done and where that isn't accommodated. In reality, I think employees are prepared to vote with their feet. So we've seen, as you just mentioned in your question, you know, employers actually become a lot more flexible and creative, I suppose, in this regard. We've worked on sort of the introduction of policies that allow employees to work for up to 30 days in a calendar year in another jurisdiction, and other sorts of initiatives that are really designed as retention tools to provide employees with the flexibility that they desire.
Actually, Nalin, I see several types of reactions amongst various EU jurisdictions. Like Ireland, many jurisdictions would try to tackle the problem, be more flexible, be more rigid, and in any event, try to pass some new legislation. And other jurisdictions, which would include France, would not do anything. They would consider that we have all the tools, that employers would manage that. So it's two types of different attitudes. And the Irish one is certainly worth stressing today. So we should keep watching for that draft bill or draft legislation you were just referring to. Now, Nalin, this will be my last question. So I'm inviting you now, Nalin, to pull out your crystal ball and try to look into the crystal ball, and tell us what would be your predictions for 2023 in Ireland and in the general employment law legislation or trends for this year.
For the year ahead, indeed. Well, as I said at the start, I think it's set to be another busy year. I think we are seeing, you know, a lot of legislation come through that's as a direct result of the pandemic. And I mentioned, you know, flexible working, remote working, the right to disconnect, etc. So all of that, sick pay, for example, all of these legislative developments have in some way been accelerated by the last 3 years of the global pandemic. So I think we will see more of that in 2023 in terms of our legislative developments here. But I would like to touch on three areas in particular that I think are going to be quite key changes for employers and their HR teams to grapple with over the course of the year. So the first is whistleblowing, which I think is a pan-European issue, but certainly something that we are seeing as a very active area of work in Ireland at the moment. The second is statutory sick pay, which I mentioned. And the third then is an individual accountability framework, which we understand from our sources is fairly imminent. It will be introduced in Ireland, I think, in the next few weeks. So I'll just start with mentioning the whistleblowing legislation. And I'm sure you're aware, Philippe, that changes were recently made to a number of different jurisdictions' whistleblowing legal frameworks in order to fully implement the EU's whistleblowing directive, which Ireland has been late in doing, but we now have legislation in place with effect from the 1st of January 2023, our Protected Disclosures Amendment Act, which really broadens and enhances the scope of existing whistleblowers legislation in Ireland. So the new Act contains several important changes that employers really need to be aware of and ensure they comply with. And the key changes include there's a wider definition of worker now that is now sort of enjoys the protections of the legislation. And that definition includes shareholders, job applicants, board members, for example. There's also a new definition and a broader definition of penalisation, which can include, let's say, for example, performance management, negative performance reviews, referring an employee to occupational health. And there's also reversal of the burden of proof in penalisation claims. So it will now rest on employers to show that any alleged penalisation of a worker was not prompted by the making of a protected disclosure. So as of the 1st of January this year, all private sector employers with more than 250 employees, all public sector employers, and then certain other employers who fall within the scope of certain EU laws in areas such as, for example, financial services. Those categories of employers must have formal reporting channels and procedures in place for workers to make protected disclosures. And then from the back end of this year, 17th of December 23, that threshold will fall to employers with 50 or more employees. So I think in practice, while most employers, or many of them anyway that we work with, already have whistleblowing policies and procedures in place, these new requirements are considerably more prescriptive and onerous than the sort of previous market standard, particularly around things like maintaining confidentiality of whistleblowers and people named in whistleblowing reports. So I think as a result of that, we're seeing many of our clients undertake a comprehensive review of their existing policies and procedures to ensure compliance with the new regime, whether or not they need to do so now or looking ahead for the deadline of 17th of December 2023.
Good to know. I just heard yesterday in the same webinar, ELA webinar I was referring to a few minutes ago, that some jurisdictions are even way behind in terms of complying with the EU deadline, but I won't quote that jurisdiction. People will have to listen to that webinar. Anyway, there was a second topic you wanted to refer to, this statutory sick pay legislation. It is more on employee-friendly, employer-friendly. What should we expect?
Well, I think certainly it's a further new departure for HR teams where they're having to manage employees' entitlements under this new statutory sick pay scheme. Again, this was introduced from the 1st of January this year, so we are expecting to see some issues sort of teased out as this scheme becomes embedded. The introduction of statutory sick pay in Ireland really just brings us in line with, I think, all other European jurisdictions. I think we were one of the only countries not to have any form of statutory sick pay. So it sort of follows on from many of the changes to the employment landscape that we have seen in Ireland in recent years. So from the 1st of January 23, employees with at least 13 weeks service who are medically certified as unable to work are entitled to statutory sick pay. So the entitlement will start at 3 days sick pay in 2023, which, you know, doesn't seem particularly onerous, but it will rise incrementally to 5 days in 2024, 7 days in 2025, and eventually up to 10 days sick pay in 2026. So the rate of statutory sick pay is up to 70% of the employee's normal weekly pay, up to a maximum of €110 per day. Employers should be aware that the statutory sick pay scheme is very much the legal minimum sick pay, and you can, of course, and many do, have a more generous sick pay scheme in place. So we are expecting issues to arise in this area, particularly as sort of seasonal flu and RSV infections are rising. And we are advising employers, if they haven't done so already, to review their sickness absence policies to ensure compliance with the new requirements.
That will certainly change the general landscape for employment relationships. Even though you did stress the fact that it will be incremental, so the legislation will not come into force immediately, but certainly a significant new benefit to be aware of. Finally, Nadine, I think that you wanted to say a few words about financial services, is that right?
Yeah, that's right, Philippe. This is a pretty major development, and I've left it to the end, although, albeit it won't apply to all clients, it'll apply to regulated financial services providers in Ireland. And, you know, the central bank here and other international regulators have for some time been talking about prioritizing individual accountability. And what we will see in Ireland, I believe, in the next few weeks is the introduction by the Central Bank of Ireland of an individual accountability framework and the proposal to introduce a senior executive accountability regime, which will largely mirror the similar regime in the UK, which is the SMCR, the Senior Manager Certification Regime. So as I say, it's at a fairly advanced stage and we expect it'll be coming in the next few weeks. So it's something that's very much a hot topic of the moment for financial services clients. So what is it going to do? Well, it's going to require regulated firms to review and overhaul their senior management arrangements, governance and HR processes. This new regime really is going to provide firms with a key opportunity to take stock of these frameworks and to improve, I suppose, the clarity and the understanding and operation of individuals' roles and roles of committees and teams within their organizations. And it'll provide much needed clarity to all of that. So SEER will also interact with other central bank reforms in relation to fitness and probity and enforcement processes. And all of these reforms, Philippe, are really intended to enhance the regulator's ability to hold individuals to account when regulatory contraventions occur in the area of the business for which they're ultimately responsible. So it's a huge area. It'll involve input from HR teams, from compliance teams, but really, you know, our strong recommendation is that, you know, you need to start preparing to be SEER ready if you haven't done so already. This exercise of assessing, you know, senior individuals' documented roles against what they do in practice, it won't be simple for large organizations and it really is likely to take a large number of admin hours. So it's, you know, I think time really for those institutions to be focused on this. So there are three of the sort of major changes that we see coming down the lines for employers and HR teams in Ireland, but there, of course, will be many more and we will, you know, aim to keep all of our members updated as and when those developments arise.
Well, thank you, Noreen. Of course, we can already decide that we'll have a rendezvous next year for to cover all those other topics that may come up over the year ahead, and we can discuss that at that time. This is unfortunately all the time we have today for this podcast. Noreen, thank you very much for sharing today your insights, your tips, your predictions with us about Ireland on this special ELA Year in Review podcast. It was a pleasure talking to you today.
Likewise. Thank you, Philippe.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. If you would like to connect with Noreen, please click on her bio in the description of this podcast. We also encourage you to reach out to any of our lawyers around the world by selecting Find a Lawyer on the ELA website at ela.law. That's L-A-W, of course. Information about all the programs available in the 2023 Year in Review series can be accessed in the notes of this podcast. You've been listening to the Year in Review Regional Roundtable, a series brought to you by the Employment Law Alliance, the world's largest network of labor and employment lawyers from the best law firms around the globe. I'm Philippe Durand. Thanks for listening.